official feminist. Yeah.
Welcome to the Financial Feminist Podcast. I'm back as your host, the Financial Feminist, and I'm restarting our news podcast as we take a look at global feminist wins. I've had a few weeks off with what can only be described as a very heavy cough and an unreliable voice that has drifted between non-existent and the kind of smoky Kathleen Turner voice I've always wanted. I just wanted to thank you for your patience in that time off and for the amazing feedback you've continued to give. My last episode received the most downloads of any episode so far, and it's that word of mouth, the feedback you give, that really makes a difference. So thank you very much for the support. I very much appreciate it. I'm recording this from and acknowledge the Gadigal of the Eora Nation, the traditional custodians of the land I'm recording the episode on, and I pay my respects to elders, past and present. A reminder too that what I'm about to discuss is my personal view and it's not professional financial advice. But if you do feel inspired to take action with your money after listening, I'd suggest first checking in with a licensed financial professional. And if you're like me and listening from Australia or munching on a stereotypical Tim Tam or avocado on toast that I believe we invented, you may want to check out the Register of Financial Advisors for Australia that we've listed on our website. Now let's look at some feminist and financial news headlines making the news this week with me, your host, the Financial Feminist. Our first story focuses on Latin America's feminists and the strides being forward made in representation in the region. A BBC News article covers that female leadership in Latin America, including in Mexico, where the next president will likely be a woman. With the two leading candidates both being women, BBC reports that it's likely Mexico will get a first man rather than a first lady standing alongside their president. The New York Times covered both candidates. One, Claudia Sheinbaum, a physicist and protege of the current president, and the second, opposition top contender, Xochitl Galvez, an outspoken engineer with indigenous roots who rose from poverty to become a tech entrepreneur. For both leading candidates, neither is explicitly feminist, but both are socially progressive, both have engineering degrees, so understand what STEM means, and say they will maintain broadly popular anti-poverty programs. So hopefully, with those priorities in mind, they can also improve gender equity through their role. BBC News reporting also addressed the change in roles for women since the days of Eva Perón as the famous First Lady of Argentina, to one where women are now pushing back on that role. That includes the previous partner of Chile's president, who felt initially as a feminist the role went against her principles. Irina Karamanos was given an office in the presidential palace, a team, and six foundations to run when her boyfriend won office. She gave it a go, but eventually transferred the six foundations to those she felt were more qualified to run them. She closed the office down. And she has left a legacy in Chile of questioning the role of First Lady and what role a president's partner of any gender should play in the future in public life, if any. In short, she was already a leader in her own right and didn't want or need to take on this First Lady role that I don't know if any of us truly understand. And she questioned why that role should be given to her based on her choice of partner. It's a feminist issue because women are taking power in different ways to what has been traditional in the region and questioning who gets to hold that power and what it should look like. A Refinery29 article covers that while it is significant to have a woman likely to be in the role of president of Mexico, feminists in the country do question if it will actually be effective for their struggle. And that's because, as reported by Refinery29 in December, both female leading candidates have yet to commit to issues associated with the feminist movement, including tackling gender-based violence, gender pay gap, and improving equity of women's access to education and social security. In short, basically ensuring equality. And that's a point worth raising. Just because someone identifies as a woman, that does not mean they're a feminist or committed to the feminist cause of gender equity. In short, committed to equality. Even though they all benefit from feminism, many women choose to pull back up that ladder behind them and say they got to where they got to based on hard work. And it's a shame because instead they can ensure the barriers for others are actually considered and put some steps in place to bridge the very real gender equity gaps that you may not face entirely by yourself, but others do. And that's why it's important to clarify up front, because not everyone will share your values, and it's very important to consider those when you have a vote that will give them power over your future. And that brings up the financial issue at play. Presidential roles are paid roles. And not only is a country's leader paid during their tenure, but afterwards you can expect speaking tours, book deals, corporate leadership roles, and enough paid company and governance roles to ensure that your pension pot is well and truly topped up. That first lady role is not often paid or recognised to the same extent unless you're Michelle Obama and a superstar, but it is significant that the ex-partner of Chile's president decided to try the role, but ultimately departed it in favour of her values. BBC News shared that she has no regrets because democratic institutions need to be legitimised. And we need to not keep some parts going if you notice they're not as legitimate as they deserve to be. As someone who's really watched politics from the sidelines, I do think it's a welcome change to have more women entering political office. And in Australia, where I'm based, there are many programs, including the Pathways to Politics program in Australia, encouraging more women to take up public office. I would argue that it would be great to see us go a step further and ask the women participating in these programs if they have a commitment to these feminist values, because while it's great to see a woman in power, it's even better to see one who believes in equity and equality and will implement that through the role and through their actions. I think it's also important for all of us to consider how we talk about women in these fields, those who are taking up political office or partners of those who are doing so. And we need to acknowledge that partners of politicians of all genders are not public property. The feminist movement is a powerful one. We're questioning how things are done, and it's thanks to women staying true to their convictions, like Irina Karamanos, that we move the goalposts forward for the next generation of feminists. For our next story, on the subject of outspoken feminist political leaders holding power, it's Australia's lucky day. That's because we've had our recent Governor-General appointed in recent weeks, and it's someone who is very well known on the subject of gender economic equity and feminist leadership in Australia. Sam Mostyn. Sam Mostyn will be sworn into the role in July and has been largely welcomed as the next Governor General. For those who are not familiar with Australia's governance, the Governor General of Australia is the representative of the monarch in Australia and represents their role in our political and community life. There's been some criticism of her appointment, and much of it makes me want to go to sleep, and it's been very deftly addressed in an ABC News analysis, which we've linked to in the show notes. And it addresses arguments, including one that she was only appointed because of her gender. To borrow from the ABC News analysis, of the 27 Governor-Generals, only one other has been female, and, to quote, "the addition of another does not, to a rational eye, even faintly confirm the emerging new underclass of judicial and military gentlemen crushed under the merciless Jimmy Choos of a new skirtocracy." It's a feminist issue too, because it changes who can be considered for government roles. Sam Mostyn has been a first before. 2 decades ago, she was the first woman to join the Australian Football League Commission, which had to change its rules to enable her appointment. And Sam said at the time, "there is an enormous honour in being the first, but I'll feel like a failure if I'm the last or the only." She's also a very different Governor-General to who we've had before. From the last 10 Governor-Generals, half have been lawyers, a third army chiefs, one a politician, and one an archbishop. There's always an archbishop in the mix. By contrast, Miss Mostyn has experience across the corporate community, sports and arts sectors, and, in her words, views success as the opportunity not to just give back, but to be part of the change I think our community needs. And the financial issue component is Sam Mostyn was chair of the Women's Economic Equality Task Force. That was convened in Australia in 2022, and it reported to government in October last year. In her report delivery, Sam said, and I quote, "despite some progress over recent years, Australian women still feel deep and broad-ranging gender inequality. Their essential contributions are often undervalued and underpaid, perpetuating economic inequality. They are tired of waiting for action to feel safe and valued and have equal access to economic prosperity." The report argued for changes including extending parental leave and paying super on those leave payments, changes which have started to be adopted. There's also a fantastic broad agenda article, which we've linked in the show notes so you can look it up after this, and it describes how Sam Mostyn painted a picture of a world where women were not routinely sidelined in the economy. She said, and to quote, "we talk about a world in which care is shared by men and women, where flexible work is available to all, where governments put a gender lens on every single policy outcome, every budget measure." That broad agenda article also shares why it matters that we have someone like Sam Mostyn as our Governor General. And it's because we are what we do. Australians may have the best intentions in the world to achieve gender equity and lovely speeches to go along with it, but until we're actually doing gender equality, intentions don't mean a thing. That and the appointment which really matters is the one we don't think to comment on because it's become normal. Sam Mostyn is an incredibly inspiring woman. I would struggle to find anyone to argue with that. And personally, I am very happy to see a woman in a position of power who is very openly, through her conduct, a feminist. In Sam's words, on the day of her appointment, "I've always believed that we are all so much more interesting and complex than the stereotypes often drawn of us by those who only have limited understanding of our character and essence." And that's a message to anyone listening. You may not fit the mould of people being appointed to a role based on history, but you can make a new mould to lead that role into the future and push forward who we think of as a leader. If not for you, then for the next generation, because leadership comes in many forms and we need to ensure we see it in practice. For our third story, can art show society's gender dynamics in action? That's the question I'm still asking after Hobart's Museum of Old and New Art, known as MONA, has now been ordered to change one of its art installations. As background, the Ladies' Lounge installation, which opened in the year 2000 at MONA, has women enter the space pampered by male butlers, served champagne while being surrounded by some of the museum's finest pieces of art. Then one man decided to sue MONA when he was denied entry. The Guardian reported the artist behind the Ladies' Lounge, Kersha Keshel, was absolutely delighted the case has ended up in court because men are experiencing the Ladies' Lounge. Their experience of rejection is the artwork. Unfortunately, the tribunal didn't see it that way, and MONA has been told to let men into the Ladies' Lounge installation. It's a feminist issue because it's focused on female spaces and shifting gender dynamics, so it is women who are in a position to deny men access. ABC News outlined the difference that while men's only clubs, which are huge networking clubs in Australia, that women are still barred from and which are still allowed to operate under a very specific exemption of them being clubs, means they can discriminate based on gender. That's how we end up with these men's only clubs, which are very powerful forces still in this century and delight seemingly in public votes to deny women access to the club. Now, why can they get away with it and MONA can't? Well, MONA and this artwork was not technically a club. It had no membership. And so, in not allowing a man to access the lounge, they were said to be discriminating against him on the basis of gender. Now, is that something that men-only clubs do? Yes, it is. But they are clubs, so technically, it's allowed. After the judgment, Tasmania's Anti-Discrimination Commissioner called for the Anti-Discrimination Act to be reviewed. And based on the fact that one man with an issue caused the whole artwork to be reviewed and likely shelved altogether, it underscores that power imbalance. It's a financial issue because the objection of one man has put an artist's work at risk of shutdown. When addressing the tribunal, the artist said the artwork's purpose was to create a space for women in response to a historical disadvantage. ABC News quoted her as saying it was an essential space for perspective and reset from this strange and disjointed world of male domination. Power still absolutely lies with men, regardless of what the law says. And given the judgment, it's very difficult to disagree with her. Again, one complaint from one man has ended her installation, her work, and that is worth highlighting. Indeed, when speaking to BBC News, the artist said, ironically, that perhaps nothing could drive the point of the artwork home more than having to shut it down. I have to talk about the way this artist and her female supporters extended that art into the courtroom. Essentially, they wore navy business clothes and engaged in discreet, synchronized, choreographed movements during the proceedings, including leg crossing, leaning forward together, and peering over the top of their spectacles. When proceedings concluded, the art did not stop. No. The group exited the tribunal to the Robert Palmer song, Simply Irresistible. Unfortunately, the tribunal did not agree. I'm sensing that they are not Robert Palmer fans, but I think that summarised the whole notion of this story. Who gets to decide access to spaces? and how one complaint from a man shut down a women's space in a society where powerful men's clubs that bar women persist and grow today. It's difficult to know where the artwork ends with the story, but that's rather the point of art, to make us think, for us to debate, and for the artist, she has achieved that in spades. And that's the news making financial feminist headlines this week. I'm back, and like the jar of Vegemite in your cupboard that seemingly never ends, I'll be here each week, hopefully in time with a less raspy voice. In short, I will never leave you again for that long. I've been the Financial Feminist. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Financial Feminist. Come back soon.